The Leah Harlequin Show. Sponsored by Step Finance, your go-to DeFi portfolio manager on Solana. BitMEX, the OG crypto derivatives platform and the best place to buy your Bitcoin.
Things really are just starting to heat up.
Hey guys, and welcome back to the Leah Harlequin Show. So this podcast is sponsored by the OG crypto derivatives exchange, BitMEX. So BitMEX has actually just launched a brand new spot exchange. So now you can easily buy and sell many different cryptocurrencies, including Bitcoin, on their exchange. So if you do want to use their exchange, I'm going to leave the information for you, a link to them in the description. So definitely pick BitMEX as your number one exchange. Also on this podcast, we talk about all the things that you're sort of not allowed to speak about, including authoritarianism, censorship, freedom, Bitcoin, and all these things. So a massive thank you to BitMEX, because without them, we wouldn't be able to bring you such important conversations. Now, before I kick the show off, please don't forget to hit the like button and hit subscribe so you never miss a video, and also so that you can support these very important conversations that we're having. Joining me today is Heidi, the host of the super popular YouTube show Crypto Tips. Heidi is an early Bitcoin adopter, and also she's been through two bear markets and three bull markets. Let's kick this off.
Hey Leah, it's great to be here. Thank you so much for having me. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, I'm really excited. There's so many interesting things going on. I think your story is really unique. But before we get into all of that, I do want to learn a little bit more about you, because this is the first time we're meeting. You call yourself an early adopter. Tell me what that means. How did you first hear about Bitcoin?
So I first was introduced to Bitcoin in about late 2014, from the person who is now my husband. He actually was trying to inform me about it. And through that, just learning more and more about how a currency could exist outside of the control of a government, how it can be valid and not scammed and duplicated and all that. So it was a long journey of education for me, because I'm coming from not a tech background, not an financial background either, or computer science. So it was all really new for me. So, I mean, if you want to talk about an early adopter mindset, what that means, basically, I think anyone now can also be an early adopter. I mean, there's still plenty of people around that are denying Bitcoin, that are think it's just a fad, or for whatever reason. I think if you're like surrounded by people who are putting it down, and yet you can still see the potential in something despite having this kind of confirmation bias surrounding you, that's kind of like an early adopter mindset you can have in a lot of different things, but including crypto too.
But you said that the way your now husband basically put this forward to you was this money, which is, you know, outside of government control. So that's quite a libertarian and political mindset. So for you, was it, you know, the gains, was it the tech, or was it the political philosophy?
I mean, obviously the gains is what draws a lot of people in, but for me, also having this like kind of a nomadic lifestyle, thinking of a currency that you can hold and transact in across borders, without permission, without having to deal with banks in different countries, is very attractive as well. Definitely the type of people who are interested in Bitcoin has evolved, from the cypherpunks to the anarchists to the liberal, other people who are, you know, anti-government or whatever. Now it's just people who are trying to hedge against inflation. And so the narrative is constantly changing for Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies. But libertarian.
Before we get into the whole anti-government thing, because for those that don't know, you renounce your US citizenship, which is mind blowing to me. And I can't wait to ask you about that. So stick around, because we're going to get into that. But I want to just get your take on the markets, because, you know, you have been through several different cycles now. And a lot of people say that this current cycle is different to all the other cycles we've seen because of all the institutional money that's now involved. So what's your take on where we're at?
Yeah, I definitely agree with, I know Willy Woo was putting that out too, how over time the dramatic volatility of Bitcoin is going to be diminished. And it makes sense, because as the market cap is growing, it takes more heavier waves to rock the boat that is Bitcoin. So also furthermore, like, okay, 2000, again, let's go through like the different bull runs, 2012 and 2013, 2014, that was, again, very small market cap, very little amount of money was needed to make that price go up, and same reverse. 2017 was when mainstream media was like pumping it out to people, and they were taking their investment advice from, you know, MSNBC and Fox News and things like this, and they weren't really understanding why it was created and the importance of it. It was just like the beginning of kind of meme coins for cryptocurrencies. So again, it was really shallow understanding of crypto, and that shallow understanding was represented in how crazy the FOMO was in 2017, 2018, and the reverse when it started backpedaling, when those irrational investors were no longer there to support that type of buying pressure. And now, yeah, what I said before, it's like we have countries having Bitcoin as legal tender. We have publicly traded companies that have Bitcoin on their books, and they're doing so because they trust Bitcoin in a certain, on a certain level, much more than they would with their fiat or any other options they would have for investing. So it's a much more deeper understanding and a trust and less speculation, I think, that we're seeing now. So I agree with Willy Woo that it's going to be less dramatic of a blow off top. You know, everyone was saying, oh, 2021, was that a blow off top? I don't think so. Does that mean that this bear market is going to be as long and drawn out or as dramatic as we've seen in the past as well? Who knows? Everyone wants to know what the crystal ball is going to say for what the market is doing. But what I am constantly leaning on is the long-term, you know, prospects of Bitcoin and what it actually, the utility that it's bringing to everyone. You don't have to be an accredited investor to buy Bitcoin. You don't have to be an institutional investor, or, you know, you don't need any credentials. So it's a pretty cool thing to see grow. And yeah. The profits are still there for sure, but maybe not as dramatic as before.
But let's talk more about the utility, because you said that you're 100% certain of Bitcoin success, which is so funny because, like, to me that's obvious, but there's a lot of people who are heavily involved in this industry, heavily involved in crypto, who just think, you know, it's old tech, it's done, it's finished. So how can you be 100% certain of Bitcoin success?
It is the most, okay, so there's been attempts at cryptocurrency since like the 1970s with the cypherpunk movement, and they've been failing over and over and over again. And Satoshi was the first one to find the solution that didn't revolve centralized control over the network. And that's what has, you know, bred this whole crypto space as we know it. So Bitcoin's been tested since 2009, and other cryptocurrencies, obviously, it's been an open source community and you can learn from the mistakes and you can make different trade-offs. But to say that even proof of stake is tested and guaranteed is false, in my opinion. That's arguably not true. We haven't seen that proof of stake be tested like Bitcoin has. And there's many reasons for that. Just the way that the consensus mechanism is different. Bitcoin, if you hold a bunch of Bitcoin, that doesn't directly give you a right to change how the network functions. Proof of stake does. So that is a very different concept and something that people should be paying attention to. But yeah, so people who say like Bitcoin is old tech, and they're going to come out with like this brand new solution, like they have a brand new consensus mechanism, they did something totally new. It's so good for marketing and for getting people excited. But when I hear that, I hear it's brand new, it's untested, yeah. It's so deep. Like we saw what happened with UST and with Anchor Protocol. We're seeing what's happening with Solana. That was like the new Ethereum killer in 2021. That blockchain's been down like 20 something times in the past year. So yeah, it's a lot of, I think, eager people coming to the space. But yeah, I feel like I don't consider myself a Bitcoin maximalist.
I was about to ask you.
I'm happy to see different crypto. I'm invested in other cryptocurrencies, certainly. But as time moves on, I think more people realize the solidity that Bitcoin has, and they lean back on that. And then, you know, they still, well, I can't speak for everyone, but for me personally, just kind of sprinkle around in different cryptos and see what happens.
But what does Bitcoin success mean? Like, in what capacity would you say, okay, that's been successful?
the ability to transact freely in a peer-to-peer fashion without censorship. The incentive model for the Bitcoin network is, in my opinion, so solid. The threat of overrunning the network from any government, from any one entity, is out of the reach, unless, you know, you're going to print your fiat currency into oblivion just to take over the Bitcoin network is kind of ridiculous. In my opinion, what it was put out for was for peer-to-peer transactions and censorship resistance, and it has done that since day one. So for me, that's successful.
So speaking of governments and everything, you said that you think that, hang on, I actually have the quote here. You said, within a couple of years, I predict that Bitcoin mining will be completely banned in every single state in the US. The writing is on the wall. You came down pretty harsh on that. Why do you think that the US is going to totally, ban Bitcoin mining?
I think that this is definitely a representation of my mindset towards the US generally. That's why I made a decision to renounce as I did. But it's something like what we were seeing with New York, right? They kind of teased it that they were going to ban Bitcoin. Oh, and then they didn't. And then some of the lawmakers there were flipped. And so now they're deciding to actually pass the bill on to the governor to sign it into law or to veto it. But so the U.S. is such a powerhouse that it is, and Bitcoin equally is such a powerhouse and how disruptive it is. I am very skeptical that the U.S. would be copacetic with Bitcoin. With Bitcoin mining, I mean, of course, you can mine Bitcoin off the grid. You can do it anonymously. But it could easily go the way of China. I'm very skeptical. And probably just super pessimistic about any kind of innovation coming from the U.S. at this point.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. You renounced your U.S. citizenship, which is so wild because I'm moving to the U.S. I'm not becoming a citizen, but I'm just moving there so I can stay there longer than 3 months. Why did you renounce your U.S. citizenship?
Yeah, well, we're all making different decisions based on where our lives are taking us and for different reasons. But ever since I left the U.S., the first time I left the country, I found myself wanting to live outside. I don't know. I felt, for example, the first place I went was Portugal, and that's where I live now for most of the time, for 6 months out of the year. And I felt more at home in that country than I did in the home that I grew up in and spent 25 years of my life. So that was the first kind of fraction for me. It was like, okay, if I'm not going to live there, why would I still be, what benefit is it for me to have ties to a country that is pretty annoying to have to deal with for paperwork? If you want to bank outside the U.S., if you want to invest in different funds outside the U.S., you aren't allowed to with FBAR and FACTA and all these things. It's like, it's pretty annoying. And especially when you already know that you're not interested in living there, it's really pointless. Not to mention the fact that you can obtain second citizenships, second passports that allow you to travel to just as many, if not more, countries that the U.S. does. So I first obtained a second citizenship in preparation for that change. And then, I haven't regretted it since I renounced in 2019. And looking at how the U.S. is going now, I should obviously mention there's living outside the U.S. and there's also cryptocurrencies. That was like the number one and number two reason. I could see, again, with regulations, how they were bottlenecked and just like suffocating the U.S. citizens and their ability to freely access cryptocurrencies. There's Binance.us versus Binance.com. There's some even decentralized exchanges where if you're identified as a U.S. citizen, you can't use it. If you wanted to invest in an ICO or a new project and you were a U.S. citizen, you couldn't invest in it. So for me, it was that's like the main reason I'm so excited that I'm not a U.S. citizen is just for the crypto reasons. But yeah, there's definitely a few.
Was it difficult? Because I heard that in order to renounce, you have to like pay like crazy exit taxes and stuff like that. You don't have to get into too much detail, obviously.
Yeah, no, there's definitely, depending on your net worth at the time of renouncement, you might have to pay an exit tax, which is basically a percentage on everything that you own. In addition to that, you are called a covered expatriate. And that means that if you were ever to like send money to family or to someone in the US, that would be taxed. Or if your net worth was under a certain threshold, you just pay a regular, you pay your last tax as you normally would on your income, but there's no additional tax on your total net worth. You do have to account for your total net worth so they can determine if you are a covered or uncovered expatriate. But that was pretty straightforward for me. I didn't fall under that threshold, so I didn't have to pay an exit tax. Thankfully, the crypto was in a bear market when I renounced. Also, I renounced in the Bahamas, which was very easy and fast process. I'm not sure what it is like now to renounce with all of the global lockdowns and the different, I think I've heard from a few people that a few of the different US embassies won't let you renounce unless you are a resident of that country. So like, for example, I wasn't a resident of the Bahamas, but I just went there and I renounced. And you do have to pay a renouncement fee, which I think it used to be like $700. And then about 5 years ago, they bumped it up to $2,300 or something like that. You can pay cash or credit. But
good to know. That really blows my mind as well, because like, I think, you know, even though I'm moving to the States, I still have an emotion, I still have an emotional connection to the UK where I'm from. And so I don't know. I mean, obviously it's different. Like, it's so different. You know, you can be a resident of another country and you still have to pay US taxes. Being British, you don't, right? Like that, it's so easy. You can go anywhere and, you know, you're not followed or anything like that for your money. But did you not feel some kind of like emotional, or like, do you not have any like identity crisis? Because like, that's where we're born, you know, you lived there for years. Like, was there no emotional difficulty in doing that?
I mean, I don't want to speak badly about where I come from and the town that I lived in, but it was a very small town mindset. A lot of people worked very hard for very little money. They're just scraping by. They're like living for the weekend. They're getting drunk at the bar every weekend. Like, it wasn't a very inspiring place to be. So when I did step out of that and start traveling, I, you know, met so many other people that were inspiring and healthy and, you know, just like encouraging. So for me, I feel more of a tie to other places than my hometown. Of course, I love my family who is still there. I see them frequently. As a renowned citizen, you can still go back to the US. You just have to apply for a visa, just like everyone else who's not a US citizen, basically. But yeah, so it wasn't as much of an emotional thing for me. Which I don't know, maybe I have something missing that it didn't affect me that much. But I also had a very supportive family that didn't try to guilt me about anything. Like, they were very encouraging, like, listen, I understand you got to do what you got to do. We love you. And this is your life and it's amazing. So yeah, I've had a lot of encouragement. So that probably helped as well.
That's amazing. Is your husband from the same place or did you meet him like on your journey?
No, he's from California too. He renounced about 6 months 6 to 8 months after me. So yeah.
That's crazy. No, I think that's so fascinating. The contrast and like the difference is crazy, but I do understand it. I don't know, emotionally, I feel like you do end up sort of, I don't know, identifying with where you're from. So you have citizenship where now then? Portugal?
In St. Kitts and Nevis. It's a Caribbean.
Ah, nice. Okay. That's amazing. So in terms of adoption and, you know, your issue with the US, you said that you think that it's going to come from a federal level, not at a state level. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Is it delayed?
No, you're good.
Yeah. Okay. So you said that it's going to come from a federal level instead of a state level. So what are the issues that you're seeing on a federal level, in terms of crypto, obviously, but I guess I'm also on a broader, from kind of like a broader perspective, it might be interesting to hear.
Well, what we're seeing, for example, with Grayscale and the SEC, or what we're seeing with the bank in Wyoming, the name is escaping me right now, from Caitlin Long, her bank in Wyoming, and they're suing the Federal Reserve. there's always going to be that glass ceiling from the Federal Reserve, from the federal level, because that's where the money is. That's what they're protecting, is their global reserve currency in the US dollar. As much as like the states want to do what they want to do, like we're seeing with Caitlin Long, and like they were working great with the Kansas City Federal Reserve. And then at a certain point, the big Fed stepped in, and suddenly it's been 19 months when normally it takes 5 to 7 days for them to make a decision. So yeah, I think it is, it's like, you know, the American dream or whatever, the American way to have state level governments. But at a certain point, it's like you have a big brother that is like the biggest brother of the world that's going to make sure it's going to look out for itself, and it's going to make whatever narrative they can about crypto to protect their special interests. So yeah, unless you secede from the US or something, I'm very skeptical that you can have a state be fully as crypto free or whatever as they'd like to be, because you're always going to have to pay federal taxes, and federal laws exist. So yeah, that's what I was meaning by that.
Do you think that America's always had this big brother, or do you think at one point the American dream was a reality, and it's kind of shifted?
Yeah, I think the American dream was reality until like the 70s. When you could have a thriving household on one income. Now it's, you know, two people working, two jobs, kids are in daycare. I mean, we can go into all how it's dilapidated, but yeah, I don't think it's always been that way. But I think that the way technology has shifted, and certain things have happened around the world, and the way that they've kind of taken advantage of those situations to advance their power grabs. Yeah, I think it's become especially apparent, especially if you travel. If you travel to different countries, you can see how things are different. I know like the UK and London, there's CCTV like every inch of the whole country. If you go to like the train stations, it's like you look like it's a bunch of cameras pointing at you. So yeah, I'm probably getting off topic there, but
no, it's
I don't think it's always been a big brother thing, but
do you think that, so obviously you're moving, you're going to ask your US citizenship. So do you think that not all countries are going to be hostile towards crypto, but not just crypto, just generally like this authoritarian kind of, this increase in like censorship, authoritarianism that we're seeing globally. Do you think that this is going to be US only, or are we going to see this everywhere?
I think, okay, so I remember I did a video on this in like 2017 about crypto called like the global flippening, talking about how some countries who have had it good have had some kind of authority over how the economies are running around the world, and global trade have had it so good for so long that, yeah, they're the ones going to be disrupted. And then there's other countries that are just waiting for the opportunity, some kind of a step up, whatever shortcut they can to get that leg ahead. And El Salvador, we're seeing it in Africa as well. And with COVID, or I'm sorry, I shouldn't say that, but with the global lockdowns that were happening.
No red flags for the algorithm.
With the global lockdowns that were happening, there was the countries that were not so strict with their regulations in that regard. And people were flooding there because, like Mexico, for example. And there were countries like just with the, you know, the required health.
The juice.
Like there were some countries that refused to make mandates and some that did. And they've benefited from that. So I think that there's always, if a country or government is hungry enough or willing to go against the grain to a certain point, they will benefit. And I think what we're going to see with El Salvador is going to be crazy. Since even last year, they adopted Bitcoin and their GDP grew by 10% for the first time. And not only just because they had Bitcoin on their books and it was like a bull run, but also because tourism is coming in. People want to go where people can use their Bitcoin and know that it's friendly and have that experience and actually integrate it into their life. I know in Nevis, one of the countries, St. Kitts and Nevis, they have like, it's everywhere. Bitcoin Cash is everywhere. My lawyer who helped me get my citizenship there, she said she basically pays for rent, she pays for groceries, everything in crypto. So yeah, it's going to be, I think, a slow transition to see what when these countries really start popping up. But absolutely, it's, I don't think it's going to be a global thing. There's, of course, there's a World Economic Forum. There's all these like kind of global powers that are going to try to keep everyone in line. But whether it's actually enforced locally in that country, I think is has a lot of wiggle room.
So do you genuinely think there's going to be this global flipping, essentially, whereby the whereby America may not be, you know, the big bad America anymore, and there could be other countries which really bring themselves onto the financial map, the just basically get a seat at the table?
I hope so. Yeah, absolutely. Imagine an economy built on something like Bitcoin, where it's a known cap supply, inflation isn't a threat. You know exactly how much is going to exist when and for whatever reason. And compared to, you know, oh, we got to print this much money because whatever decision, we're going to spend it here. And you have no say in that whatsoever, but you're the victim of it through that hidden tax that is inflation. So I hope that they get shaken up. I think they've been top dog for too long. They've taken it for granted, and it's at the expense of the citizens. So yeah.
But it's interesting because this would, you know, you mentioned the World Economic Forum, and like there's this whole narrative being pushed that Bitcoin is, you know, either bad for the environment, it's supported by lunatics, right-wing, alt-right kind of illiterate lunatics, everything. I think even like I'm seeing things like people that go to the gym tend to be more right wing. There's like this huge weird push that I'm seeing going on. So why do you think that's happening? And where do you think it's coming from?
Oh, because they're scared. That's why. They you know, the narrative was always, oh, Bitcoin is for criminals. Even though technically most people don't know how to do Bitcoin in a really private manner. So it's like pseudo anonymous, basically. So a lot of criminals don't use Bitcoin because it's like very easily traced. And now actually the US Treasury came out with a report, I'm not sure exactly how long ago, it was within the year, saying that the amount of transactions happening for illicit activity with Bitcoin is like a drop in the bucket, like completely minuscule compared to other traditional financial tools like cash or whatever, banking, you name it. But so the narrative is always changing, and it's always because it's a threat. And the thing with the energy consumption of Bitcoin that is laughable, if you do any research whatsoever, you'll learn that like 60% of Bitcoin mining is done with renewable energy. And not to mention the fact that this push for like, okay, so it's really interesting what's happening with Ethereum and their move from proof of work to proof of stake. It's really weird timing because it's like falling in line with this ESG narrative that they're pushing so much, when in reality, Ethereum was planning this since the day it was launched in 2015. It was planning to be proof of stake, and now it's like all of a sudden politically correct as well. But again, this a lot of people think like, oh, well, what if Bitcoin goes to proof of stake? Some people who are saying that, I mean, anyone who has really done their research on Bitcoin knows that's never going to happen for many different reasons. But even that concept of using that narrative, oh, it's more energy efficient. But again, going back to what I said about proof of stake, how it's different from proof of work is that suddenly these whales can change the network, how it functions, can come together and change just because they're holding a lot of Bitcoin. I think it's really important to have that separation of running the network and interacting with it and the coins involved. So they're always going to find something to try to scare either that or they're trying to push down the price so then they can buy more before it pumps again. I don't know. But it's definitely coming from fear.
But by the way, can you hear me okay? Because I'm seeing comments that my mic isn't working very well. So can you hear me clearly?
I can hear it, yeah.
You can hear me clearly? Okay, so yeah. Guys, let me know in the comments if you can hear me. I don't know what's wrong. So with all these like bizarre narratives that are coming out, Oh, apparently my mic is better now. That's great. Thanks, guys. So with all these bizarre narratives that's coming out, it's so interesting because having these conversations, people often call you a conspiracy theorist. They think you're crazy and all this stuff. And I mentioned this actually on a few episodes ago that I did. And I was talking to somebody at a party and I said something like, you know, the president, Joe Biden, he can't even string a full sentence together. And somebody screamed at me and was like, you're a conspiracy theorist. And I'm like, bro, like just watch a video. So how do you like navigate these ideas and this world and you're trying to wake people up without being called a conspiracy theorist? And how do you get people to take what you're saying seriously?
Yeah, it's definitely a balance between, you know, not wasting your time and not like throwing your pearls to the swine. You know what I mean? Like, I haven't made it my mission to like convince everyone to think what I think. But there are some red flags that I feel the need to like just shut it out. And then if someone, you know, wants to understand it or look more into it, that's great. But yeah, conspiracy theorist or critical thinker, I don't know. I feel like those are kind of synonymous these days. But you got to go back to also that early adopter mindset. Like, you know, there's a lot of people who could see what was happening with Bitcoin and the importance of it. I mean, also talk about like, okay, talk about foresight and the cypherpunk movement. In 1993, Eric Hughes wrote the Cypherpunk Manifesto. If you haven't read it, I highly recommend it. These guys understood the importance of encryption and protecting people's privacy rights online through communications. That was in 1993. That was like way before the internet took off. And that's the kind of foresight they had. And they volunteered their time. They weren't paid for this in any way. And that movement eventually culminated into the creation of cryptocurrencies as well. So you have to, you know, not count anything out. Take it all with a grain of salt, but also be aware and see what is happening. And also be a little skeptical over why certain things are going down the way that they are. I mean, you don't have to go completely crazy and like neurotic and like hide in a bunker in your house or whatever, but like you can definitely also benefit from trying to understand what's happening and be strategic and flexible in your life to, you know, not get taken out or, you know, maybe possibly even benefit at the very least, not get taken out, you know?
Yeah. And this whole conversation sort of goes further than, I know everything is about money, but it goes further than that because I know a lot of Americans are having issues with like the farmland now, which is totally being bought up by Bill Gates. I saw that I think a chicken farm or something was totally burnt down the other day. And that was like owned by a family or something. And that had been around for like decades and has always been fine. So like food is a really big topic. I wondered if you had any thoughts on farming and food or anything like that.
It's a skill that I feel like I should learn. Like everyone should learn just in case something happens. Also just like, you know, understanding where your food is coming from. I'm really health conscious and, you know, try to eat as organic as possible whenever I can. But yeah, obviously food is, whenever you're talking about if something has intrinsic value, it goes down to food. It boils down to that. That's where you're like, you know, sustenance. So yeah, this whole concept, I don't know how familiar you are with like the World Economic Forum and their ideas of like, you know, we're gonna eat bugs and like just completely chemically created meat or something. I don't know. The more that they push that thing, the more I want to go the other way. And there's so many hypocrisies in the members of that forum and their versus what they're putting out. For example, Bill Gates, he flies his private jet all over the place, like, and he's preaching about saving the environment and things. So yeah, I'm very skeptical that they're actually looking out for our own self-interest and not just trying to push whatever they can for their own reasons. So I won't be eating any bugs unless it's by accident.
How do you find yourself like so sure of these things? Because again, it always comes back to that conspiracy theorist thing. Like I'm aware of what's going on with the World Economic Forum. I know the whole bug narrative. But whenever I speak to people who aren't in my bubble or my echo chamber, they always think it's so crazy. Like I had a family member around for dinner last night.
And I was talking about Bill Gates, and I was sort of saying, you know, well, if he really cared about the environment, he wouldn't have his short position on Tesla. Did you see the text that he sent Elon Musk? You know, I'm getting like really... And my family and my family members just like, what? No, Bill Gates like totally cares about the environment. And, you know, he's doing it. I don't understand like why some people don't see it so clearly.
I think it's a lack of investigating on their part. I think a lot of people outsource their critical thinking to other people, or they just don't want to believe that there's such a prevalent boogeyman right in front of them that's actually really controlling everything about their life. The past 2 years should have been a shining example of that. I don't want to get into that whole conversation of what happened the past 2 years, because that can be very touchy, but I think it's a perfect example of how extreme things can get. Whenever I think of like people, like you're saying, they don't believe you or whatever, my skepticism is like, well, just wait and see. Like, it's okay. Like, I don't have to be right. You don't have to be right. We'll just wait and see. And I'm going to be as strategic as I can with my life decisions, where I invest my money, where I live, where I travel to, my health decisions. You can follow their narrative and see how it goes for you. But for me personally, it's like, I find much more comfort in my own knowledge and my own independent research than whatever's is being spoon fed to me, you know, from whatever source. It's like Facebook or social media or whatever. They tend to be very emotional arguments. And actually, if you find that they're like, okay, I like Bill Gates. If you ask like, okay, well, what does he do specifically that you like? They don't know. They can't say anything. They just know that they heard somewhere sometime he's a good guy or something or whatever. So, and take that concept to like all these other things that people should be questioning, but they don't. It's very surface level belief that they have. And if you just ask a simple question, what do you think about what this happened? And they don't know, or it's just, yeah. And maybe that question that you ask is good enough to send them on their way down that rabbit hole to do their own research, and you've done a good job.
So where do you think this whole thing is going? Because I know you've spoken a bit about CBDCs. I try and talk about CBDCs as much as possible. You know, by 2030, you'll have nothing and you'll be happy, bugs and all that great stuff. It's so freaky. It's literally like a James Bond movie. It's like if it's where Klaus Schwab is a real James Bond villain. But where is this all going?
CBDCs are such a scary thing for me to think about, how easy it will be for them to force that on people. But actually, Toby had a really good point. We were talking about this the other day, my husband, Toby. He was saying that there could be that like all these regulations that are being put on crypto through, they use excuses like what happened with Luna and, oh my gosh, stable coins need to be regulated. They need to be identified. You need a KYC if you want to do a stable coin because it's in your best interest. And so they're trying to kind of regulate crypto in such a way that it's going to be kind of synonymous with how a CBDC is going to be functioning. So they're kind of like getting you used to interacting it, because if it wasn't regulated and it was totally free, you could only, you know, you could do open a crypto account with just an email and a password like you used to be able to do. And now they try to bring in a central bank stablecoin that has all these different hiccups and control and lack of privacy, and it's not a public blockchain and you can't see where your transaction's going to, but they can. It would be such a stark difference that people with any ounce of a brain would choose the other option rather than a CBDC. And, you know, the free market would kind of win out in that way. But yeah, in the long term, it's going to be probably surface level. If you have to interact with a CBDC, you do so at a minimum, or you're completely off the grid and you're all in the seedy underbelly of decentralized privacy coins and cryptocurrency. It sounds so Orwellian when I'm describing this, whenever I think about it. We do an AMA, and I had someone ask me 15 years from now, let's say you're still living in the US, and let's say they've banned Bitcoin and you've never sold Bitcoin and you're ready to retire. What do you do with crypto? And I was like, you go to a different country that's adopted Bitcoin and you live happily ever after there. Like, at what point, like, that's, at what point is it worth it to live in a country and contribute to that country through paying taxes, that you have this like moment where you're like, nomad capitalist always says, go where you're treated best. I think that's a great saying to have and live by. But yeah, I understand there's people who are patriotic. I understand there's people who have family and ties and for whatever reason they can't leave. But when push comes to shove, at a certain point you have your limits. And I wasn't willing to wait to see how bad it gets before I left. That might be, but I had other places to go that I'd rather go anyway. So it worked out. But yeah, not to get too doomsday on here, but I think there's definitely going to be two worlds of cryptocurrency. And the people who know about Bitcoin now are great. They have such a heads up and step in the right direction of understanding how to interact with crypto freely, how to have your own wallet, how to use a decentralized exchange, and just really simple things like that. Because now, you know, we have PayPal coming into crypto. We have so many wallet providers that for DeFi, I've been trying to find research of like wallets outside of MetaMask that you can use. And so many of these wallets advertise and they market themselves as being user-friendly. Oh, if you forget, you don't have to worry about your seed phrase. If you forget your password, we can get it back because they're the ones holding the seed. Like you don't have real ownership, but they don't say that. And so people who are coming in, like that's been my mantra and basically why I have this channel is like just to remind people like, no, this is how you should do it. I know how convenient that is, but I believe in your ability to learn this. I believe in your ability to do this the right way. So it's important.
And you said go where you're treated best. So you're in Portugal. So I'm really interested to know what life is like in Portugal. Do you have like, are there like-minded people? Is there a big crypto community? And then I also saw that there was going to be some regulation or something on taxes, but that didn't pass.
Yeah. So we moved to Portugal in 2015. That was before they made any announcement being crypto friendly or no taxes on crypto. We moved to Portugal because the low cost of living, the high quality of life, surfing, the food, the people. Oh my gosh, the people, the locals there are amazing. So I love Portugal. It feels like home for many different reasons. And then in, was it 2017 or 2018, they said they weren't going to tax crypto. And and it's been that way for several years until this year. I think they had the left side more in their government. And so they're pushing for taxes. And I think there was some misinformation on what happened. Was it about a month ago? Because I have a lawyer in Portugal. And so she's into crypto and she's like, it's in her best interest to know exactly what's happening here. So she told me how there was this meeting that they were going through this agenda to discuss with the finance minister. And at the end of the meeting, it was an unofficial question. This guy just offhandedly say, hey, are we going to tax crypto? And he said, the finance minister said, listen, there's been a study that was requested last year. It hasn't been completed yet, let alone we haven't analyzed it yet. If and when, you know, that happens, we will analyze it and make a decision. He refused to give any timeline of when it was going to happen. And then shortly after that, I think the left side was putting up to vote to approve some taxes for crypto and it was denied. So I don't think it's going to last forever being tax-free in crypto, for Portugal, but enjoy it while you can if you are here. But speaking of the people who are coming into Portugal specifically for crypto, yeah, there's been a lot of all over the place, actually. Lisbon, there's these cafes and workspaces where it's all crypto. There's no crypto exchange.
Oh, it's frozen. I don't know if that's just, guys, can you let me know if it's me or if it's Heidi that's frozen? Oh, can you hear me, Heidi?
Yeah, can you hear me now?
Yeah, I don't know if it was you or me that froze, but I can hear you now.
It might have been mine. I'm surprised my Wi-Fi has been this good so far.
I'm surprised my mic has been so terrible. Honestly, that's what I'm surprised about. I thought it was okay. But go on. Sorry, you were saying like you don't think it's going to last, but right now it's good for people to come.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I think that you should have an understanding that if you're coming here specifically just because it's crypto free, there's this whole concept of like, okay, it's crypto friendly. It can either mean that there's zero regulations, but those regulations could come in the future, which is what Portugal is right now. Or there's really clear regulations, you know what you're going to be paying, and it's solidified in law, and it's also a pretty small tax. That's like the best, crypto friendliness. So Portugal, it's not regulated, so it could go either way. So if you're trying to, you know, base your life based on where you're going to be paying your taxes for crypto, it might be short-lived in Portugal, but there's lots of other reasons to move to Portugal too. It's an awesome country, but not trying to shill Portugal too hard. I can't help it.
No, it's cool. I see Portugal in my future at some point. I see at some point in my
future. If you do, you got to let me know. I'll show you around.
I will do. No, 100%. I will. If Portugal has these taxes potentially coming, where are you bullish on long term? How successful do you think El Salvador is going to be? I know they have their no income tax, no capital gains tax on Bitcoin and all this stuff. So, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'd be eager to see how their volcano mining turns out as well. Mm. I know they put that project on hold because it didn't quite time out with the bull market, which for me was kind of weird. Like, you should just maybe, you know, push that either way. I think it's a good thing to do. But I mean, talk about crypto being an experiment. That's an experiment as well. Yeah. They've already benefited from it. I think they're going to be obviously feeling what it is to have such a volatile asset as their legal tender. But I think generally over time, just like with any kind of investment in Bitcoin, generally over time, we're going to do really well. So I'd be interested to see how they continue to build out their infrastructure and how that's surrounded by crypto and also how the locals feel about it. Usually when a country is trying to, you know, create more wealth or stimulate some kind of tourism, unfortunately, it's at the expense of the locals. Like, these new, you know, crypto rich people come in and the prices of property are skyrocketing. All of a sudden, the locals can't even afford to be there anymore. So hopefully there's some kind of regulation to protect them as well, or to benefit them specifically. So that's what I'd be looking for. Also, I think Dubai is kind of an interesting one to see how that's developing.
No, like, I disagree with you on that one. I'll go on. Yeah. Sorry, you speak.
No, fast. I was just saying, not just that they're like, you know, tax free and crypto friendly.
I don't know. My thing with Dubai is like it's so inauthentic. Like, the whole place is just like
it is an oasis on a salt flat.
The whole thing is so inauthentic. So like, I don't for a second believe that it's pro crypto, because like, for me, like, what is pro crypto? Like, what is pro Bitcoin? It's like freedom, independence. But like, in Dubai, I think when someone just snaps their fingers, you know, you could have that taken away easily. So I just don't trust that the intentions are good. For me, that whole thing with Dubai is so inauthentic. I just feel really weird about it.
Well, that's good. We'll keep an eye on that one. We'll see how it develops.
But Portugal, I want to come to El Salvador. I'm really intrigued. Do you think the rest of Latin America are going to follow?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of interest, from other countries in South America. And what was it? Oh, it's escaping me. Jamaica was like going to be the next to launch a CBDC or something. That's not the same thing, obviously, as adopting Bitcoin. But I think there's probably countries now that are waiting to see, like, okay, so El Salvador like stepped out, right?
Right.
Like, okay, we're going to do it. And then that's a bear market. So people are going to just be like, okay, we'll see how they do. And then if they can come out on top, okay, we'll back that up as well. But it's pretty exciting times to be able to see this and to have the freedom of flowing information that we have now compared to, say, like, you know, even 30 years ago with the internet. Like, it's pretty cool to be able to watch this unfold in probably the most honest way that we could possibly understand how it's happening.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. It's an insane time to be alive. I mean, we spoke at the beginning of the conversation about the American dream being dead, but in my eyes, this is sort of like the new American dream, but it's like the global dream. It's like the individual dream. And so, I think it's fascinating to to watch it all play out. But Heidi, how can people follow you, see what you're up to? You've got a YouTube channel, like show yourself. How can people get in touch with you?
Yeah, so we post videos every day on YouTube. It's Crypto Tips. I don't know if they say my little name tag there. It's the same thing that we have there. On Twitter, it is Blockchain Chick. Check the spelling. Scammers are everywhere. We also have a Patreon group called the CT Club. Just go to patreon.com/CryptoTips. I'm on Instagram too. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm on TikTok. I'm trying out are you on TikTok yet?
Yeah, I'm on TikTok. It's a weird experience, but I'm slightly addicted to it. It's actually very good.
Yeah, we're on TikTok. It's Real Crypto Tips because someone already took our name, of course. But yeah, you can find us there.
That's perfect. Guys, please go follow Heidi. It's so great to see people who are so awake to everything that's going on right now. The YouTube channel is pretty amazing. So many amazing crypto tips, as the name says. So Heidi, thank you so much for coming on. It's been such a pleasure having you.
Yeah, thank you, Leah. It's been great.
Absolutely. And guys, please don't forget to hit the subscribe button so you never miss a video. And I think my mic kind of cut out at the beginning. So I just want to let you know this is sponsored by BitMEX. They are an OG crypto exchange. They've just launched an amazing spot exchange platform. So if you do want to join them, the information is in the description. So go check them out. So we will see you all next week. And thank you so much for tuning in. Bye-bye. The Leah Heilpan Show.